Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Parenting SOS. Here at Happy Mum Happy Baby, every month we are treating you to a special episode where we'll be taking a deeper dive into some of the most important conversations around parenthood. You'll hear from a range of experts and hopefully together we can start leaving feeling a little bit more well-informed about some of life's trickiest topics. My guest this week is the nutritional therapist and homeopath Lauren Johnson Reynolds, aka the London Wellness Coach. After being diagnosed with polycystic ovary syndrome as a child, Lauren went on a long and difficult journey to better understand her own body and fertility. Now she's helping other women do the same. Lauren, hello and welcome.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much for having me here.
I feel like polycystic ovaries is something that I've heard about because, as you know, I was diagnosed many moons ago. But I think unless you're in that situation, you don't really know much about it. And even when you are in that situation, what you do get told is a little bit conflicting and it's a little bit daunting and overwhelming.
Yeah.
In many ways, there's not enough out there. And in other ways, there's too much of the unhelpful stuff.
Exactly.
I guess a good place to start is, what is PCOS?
Oh my gosh, the million-dollar question. It's a tricky question to answer because it's so misunderstood. But people think it's a gynae issue, but it's not really. It's a hormonal issue that actually often stems from blood sugar imbalance. I think people understand that it's very much linked to weight, but actually what people don't realise is that PCOS impacts mental health, energy, our sleep and wake cycles. It's so much more than just being kind of a fertility issue. People really tend to refer to it as something that impacts our reproductive years, but it's a lot more than that because we have higher instances of cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, and that is lifelong, fatty liver disease. You know, you will have it for the rest of your life for most people. And that's, I think, something that we need to understand a little bit more about PCOS.
Yeah, absolutely. Like when I was diagnosed, I was literally handed a printed out leaflet from the GP that looked like it was from Wikipedia. It didn't look like it was an official piece of paper. And I saw the sort of subheadings and stuff. And me and Tom, we knew that we wanted kids some point in the future, but it wasn't a now thing. And the doctor turned around and said to me, "Oh yeah, but you're not there yet. So we don't need to worry about that yet." And then just sent me off. And I was like, okay.
But what it, fellow?
But what it? Because being a mother for me, that was always such a massive thing that was my future.
Yeah.
So it felt like a very odd thing to just be kind of packed up and off you go. Obviously, I know the NHS is overstretched. I would have been at the end of my 10 minutes and, on to someone else. But it's just such a confusing place to be. What are some of the symptoms that people might be experiencing if they have PCOS?
So the most common symptoms tend to be a lack of ovulation, which in turn results in irregular periods. So that's, that normally tends to be the first symptom that people realise something's going on. But then with that, because of the high androgen, so the higher male hormones, as we think of them, because of that, there tends to be a lot of acne. So like that can be on the back, chest and shoulders or along the jaw.
I used to get shoulders every,
Yeah, me too. And it's something, if I don't watch my diet, if I've, you know, or haven't had enough sleep, or, you know, I've been touring and life's been a bit hectic, it will pop back up because it's always there under the surface. Excess face and body hair. So often women with PCOS will find that they do have to pluck or wax. I mean, I'm very open about having waxed since the age of 9 or 10, my tash, and it's part of my life now. And then hair loss, which is normally from the temples. You can see some thinning here. And that is kind of that male pattern balding. So those are the really common symptoms, and weight gain or difficulty losing weight. So that tends to be what people go to the doctors for. But then, as I mentioned, there are some real sinister symptoms that often aren't linked to PCOS until you deep dive into it. It's just not well known.
On my fertility journey, a friend of mine had handed me a book that was all about PCOS, and he was a nutritionist and the diet that he had given his wife. And it made me so angry. You know, it was amazing that my friend had given me this book, and I absolutely adore him for that. But at first I was so angry that, why did I have to go on a diet? Why did I have to cut out all the things I loved? You know, that's part of the process in understanding and living with PCOS, is that it's all right. It's all right to have that, like, those moments. And for that, I think it's understandable why there might be disordered eating, because you're going to go through patterns of being, in brackets, good, you know, for your PCOS, and other times where you're just a bit like, meh, I've got to live my life.
Well, exactly. And we have to be realistic about our abilities. And I can attest to feeling like that. And I have felt like that for probably before my diagnosis, because I started gaining weight at a really young age. I think I was about 7 or 8. It was pre-puberty that my symptoms actually started to crop up. And I know that now. We didn't know that then. To be honest with you, I've only realised that since doing, really going into the research, because I've just written a course. That's how I realised actually that it started since then. And so I was effectively put on a diet, or had certain foods limited from that age, 8 years old. And I remember crying in the supermarket because there was something I wanted to get. And my mum, bless her heart, saying to me, oh, you can't, it's too fattening. And so from that age, I already had that in my mind that I couldn't eat certain things. And as time went on, I think my disordered eating started at a really young age. And I have to say, it's probably only, I think, since I met my husband, he's really, I don't know whether I just felt so safe with him that I was able to realise what I needed to work through.
Yeah.
But also I think then retraining as a nutritionist and understanding how to fuel my body and making connections that actually, you know, my greed, as I saw it, wasn't really greed. It was, you know, imbalanced blood sugar, and it was craving carbohydrates and craving sugars because of the blood sugar issues. Yeah. It took a long time to get there. It's natural.
How old were you when you got diagnosed?
So I was 14, my first diagnosis, and you know, I talk about this a lot in that it was really very much a dark cloud that I then carried, because she told me there and then, you know, you probably won't be able to get pregnant naturally. You'll probably need to come back for help when you do want to have children. And hearing that at the age of 14, it was devastating. It really was.
And also at 14, all you want to do is fit in. And that's something big that's made you other. You know what I mean? That is then any conversations that your friends might be having about the future, your future is suddenly a little bit, I don't know what that's going to be, because you carry that innocence, I think, when it comes to, you know, pregnancy. You know, I think when you're a teenager, you think anyone can get pregnant at any moment just by looking at someone, you know. So I think it's only as you get older that you realise actually there's so many complexities within that, and then you hear about infertility and stuff. So at that age, it must have, even though you weren't going to be having children then, it must have been a big thing to kind of go, you know, what do I do?
It was exactly that. It was huge, because actually, even though I was only 14, I knew that I would always wanted to be a mum. I was obsessed with babies, even at that age. And at one point I wanted to be a midwife. I was really in that baby space. Yeah. And so I knew, you know, children were always going to be my future. And I found some old diaries of mine, actually. And I'm, you know, I'm writing there, oh, I still haven't had my period. And it was a real thing that was on my mind and a real concern. And as I got older, I was put on the pill, and then that did improve my symptoms in terms of my acne. But as time went on, it wasn't working for me anymore. And it was just, it's always been there in the back of my mind. It's always been this shadow just there. But what if you can't get pregnant? Yeah, it's really affected my life.
What is the link between fertility and PCOS?
The main issue is that women with PCOS often aren't ovulating, or they may be ovulating infrequently, which of course we have to ovulate to be able to have an egg fertilised and get pregnant. So in that respect, it's a lack of opportunity rather than it being, you know, a structural issue or something like that.
You were saying that it's important to get to know your ovulation pattern. With PCOS, that can be really difficult because sometimes there is no pattern, or you have super long, you know, times between periods. How can you get on top of that?
You know, if you research how to fall pregnant, it will be by the ovulation sticks, 28-day cycle. Then if you have PCOS, that may not be the case for you at all. I've never had a 28-day cycle in my life. So, you know, that's not going to work. So what I teach my clients and what I've put into the course is that it's important to learn your body's own signs. So that might be, I mean, I really, really recommend basal body temperature tracking. So using the thermometers that you can get specific for this, they then will sync to an app and it will log all of your temperatures and it will follow your patterns and it will confirm that you've ovulated if you do. You can get ones that go around the arm now, which I really like, because if you've got a little one and you're up and down in the night, it still is able to track that accurately, whereas the thermometers won't be as accurate. And then it's also tracking your body's signs in terms of, you know, cervical mucus that you might see. So that egg white cervical mucus is a really great sign that ovulation is on its way. So that can signal that you're entering your fertile window. So when that's happening, I'm like, okay, get busy. This is your time. And then you can confirm that you have ovulated using the basal body temperature tracking.
Yeah. What would you tell your younger self if you, if, you know, having been through everything that you have now, what would you go back and tell your younger self, maybe when you were first given that diagnosis?
Oh gosh, this question always makes me cry because it's, I just think about my younger self and I just feel pain because I know how hard it was for her. But I would definitely say it's not your fault because I very much took all of it on. You know, I felt like my weight was my fault. Oh my gosh, I might not be able to have children. My greed, my gluttony, I really felt about myself in such a negative way. Yeah. So I would definitely go back and say, it's not your fault. You know, none of this is because of you. None of this is because you're lazy. None of this is because you don't have the willpower that other people have. And then, gosh, if I had the knowledge I have now, I would be passing that all on to her because I think it could have prevented a lot of pain. And I think it's just having that hope, keeping that hope. Because I could have never imagined at the age of 14 at my diagnosis that I could be living how I'm living now. You know, I've got my beautiful daughter who is just lights up my life. I've got another one on the way. And this one was conceived like that.
Really?
It shocked me. It was literally like, oh, I think I might be ovulating. And then 9 days later, I'm pregnant. It was literally like, it was crazy. And I did not think that could happen for me. So, yeah, I would just say, just, you're okay. You're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
On Parenting SOS, we ask you to bring in three questions, your most asked questions. So they are, let me ask you, the first one is, can I conceive naturally with PCOS?
I'm sure you can, is the answer. You probably can. As long as you're ovulating, you have the opportunity to fall pregnant. I cannot guarantee, but I can say there's a great chance that you can. And if you're not ovulating, don't lose hope, because there's a lot that you can do through diet and lifestyle alone without touching any medications that can actually restore your ovulation and give you that opportunity to fall pregnant. So absolutely do not lose hope.
The second question is, how can I avoid getting gestational diabetes during pregnancy?
Yeah, so this is a big one. And I do have women come to me already pregnant just for that support of how to get through their pregnancy without getting gestational diabetes. Because obviously, because of the blood sugar issues that come with PCOS for many of us, we can be at a higher risk of gestational diabetes. So with that, you know, I say, if you're already on inositol, that's a great supplement for helping to support blood sugar, and it's generally safe for pregnancy. So often they're already on it, so I say stay on that. That's really helpful. And then we focus on their food. It has to be their food and movement. So starting their day with a protein-rich breakfast, often once they're past that initial trimester, because that can be really rough and you don't necessarily want to be tucking into scrambled eggs. But when they can, I always recommend starting with protein. That really helps to balance blood sugar for the rest of the day. And actually, research shows that by starting with a protein-rich breakfast, and this is for anyone, but especially those of us with PCOS, by starting with a protein-rich breakfast, we actually eat less carbohydrates and sugar and crave them less throughout the day. And they can actually be less evening snacking, less hunger in general by just starting with protein. So that's an amazing tip, because when you start with a more sugary breakfast, something like cereal, toast with jam or something like that, your blood sugar will spike and then it will crash. And then you are just, your body's working all day and it's just on this roller coaster. But by starting with protein, it tends to stay a lot more stable. So that's a really great hack. And then just keep an active, which is hard when you're pregnant. And, you know, pregnancy comes with so many aches and pains, but staying active and walking after meals is a really simple way, again, to keep blood sugar balanced, as you're effectively utilizing the sugar that you've taken in through your food, the glucose. And those are two really simple ways. So again, it can't guarantee that you're not going to develop gestational diabetes, but, you know, through just simple movement and watching your diet and just, you know, even just making sure that you're not eating carbohydrates alone. So if you're going to have a banana, which would be considered a carbohydrate, just having a little handful of nuts as well, and that will help to keep your blood sugar balanced. So it's simple tweaks, but it's definitely possible not to develop gestational diabetes.
Yeah. Third question is, how can I incorporate daily PCOS self-care into life with a baby or toddler?
That's a tough one, which I am living right now. But do you know what? It's it's about small tweaks.
Yeah.
When I had my daughter, I think she was about, gosh, she must have been about 3 months old. And I was like, right, I'm going to get back to the gym. And to be honest with you, I burned myself out. It was too much. I was doing too much. I was back with my trainer. I'm working out for an hour. It's about small little chunks. So, you know, it's just about saying to myself, okay, I'm going to be a bit more active. We're going to walk to wherever it is that we're going. We're just not going to drive today. You know, it's about fitting it in where you can, making sure that you're having breakfast, you know, because it's so easy to just make sure the kids are okay. And then you realize it's midday and you haven't actually eaten anything yet. And it's so important when you've got blood sugar issues to actually make sure that you are eating regularly. So simple things, or just taking a minute. And it's hard to find a minute sometimes with a toddler or a baby, I know that. But it's incorporating little bits of self-care into normal daily activities. So whether it's, you know, you're brushing your teeth, and for those 2 minutes, I'm going to actually do some belly breathing. So I'm going to breathe in for 4 and breathe out for 8. And that's my stress reduction. And that's where I've incorporated that, because as we've spoken about, stress can impact PCOS. So it's the simple things. It's not putting that pressure on yourself like, right, I need to do this, 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 and this. No. A couple of things. Start with one and then just build up as you get used to that. And as it starts to feel easier, then add another thing, because I think it's being realistic about our expectations of ourselves. We cannot hold ourselves to the same standards when we now have a little human that is completely dependent on us.
We asked the Happy Mum, Happy Baby community for some questions to send in. And we have, what advice or tips do you have for emotional health associated with PCOS and balancing hormones? So obviously that's the other side, isn't it? We kind of think about all those hormones going wibbly wobbly, and actually how that impacts our emotional well-being is huge.
It is huge. And, you know, we've spoken about the higher rates of anxiety and depression, lack of sleep. it really impacts our circadian rhythm. It's almost a bit topsy-turvy. Like, it's kind of, you know, we tend to want to stay up later, so we're a bit more tired but wired. So we're tired, but we can't sleep at night.
Right.
Oh, God, there's so much that impacts it. But I think it's really important to have boundaries. If you're feeling emotionally a little bit on the edge, have those boundaries, learn to say no. Again, very difficult. As a mother, we have this mm-hmm. guilt. Say no. And actually, sometimes it's so tough, but try to prioritize yourself. What people don't realize as well is that balancing blood sugar or imbalanced blood sugar actually does have an impact on our emotions, because when our blood sugar is going up and down, our body actually releases stress hormones to try to right it. So we may actually find that on a day where we're kind of just living on sugar and we're rushing around and we're stressed, that actually we feel more emotional. So, you know, it's also about thinking about what you're putting in that will have an impact on the emotional side of things. And it's just forgiving yourself. You know, I talked about this a lot, but it's just understanding that it's not your fault and mm-hmm. that you're not alone and that you will be okay. It's half the battle. Yeah. Don't be afraid to reach out for help. You know, I found therapy really life-changing because I have so many emotional baggages that I'm carrying because of my PCOS. I really needed to talk those through.
It's so important, isn't it? And I think if we all treated ourselves how we treat others, oh. you know, life would be so different. Someone has asked, how long does it take to change eating habits? That's such a massive thing, isn't it? Because I think we've trying to get those things so it's not just a fad, you know, it's not just something you're going to do for now.
It's a combination of willpower, because that's going to get you through the initial bit. Then it's going to be habit. And then also understanding your PCOS body and what it needs. Because you can have all the willpower in the world, but if you're living on sugar and your insulin is raising, your body is going to be telling you to eat more carbs, eat more sugar, and it's going to store fat. That's what it's telling your body when your insulin is high. So it's a combination of willpower, habit making, and then actually making sure that you're doing the right things in terms of how you're fueling yourself. But I have to say, you know, they say, you know, 75 days or 3 months to make a habit. But I have to say, for me personally, to undo the habits of a lifetime, you know, I've conditioned myself in this way, it's taken some years. But this is, yeah, it has, I have to say. And for me, Christmas has always been a measure of how well I'm doing, because Christmas historically is a time to gorge. And that's how I saw it. I was like, right, I'm going to be eating everything, chocolate, orange and night, like no holds barred. And then when I started studying and learning and changing how my body wanted food and how I saw food and doing the therapy, Christmas was my measure. So it's like, okay, well, this Christmas I definitely binged a lot less. And then the next Christmas, I binged less. And then this Christmas, I didn't binge at all. Yay. That's how it's kind of, but it has taken years. And I still have those moments where I do want to just go for it. And that's normal, I think. But habits take time to change and to reform. For some people, yes, maybe it will take 30 days, 60 days, 90 days for them to form a habit. But when you have PCOS and it impacts your appetite so much, put a little bit less pressure on yourself. Don't think about time limits like that. It takes as long as it takes. And this is why I always recommend not doing something too strict. A lot of people think they need to cut out dairy and gluten, or, you know, they want to do keto, which, okay, it might work for some people, but it's so restrictive that it's hard to actually be consistent.
Well, that's the thing. Do you think something like that might work for a period of time? And then ultimately when you stop doing that, you're back to square one?
I don't know if you're necessarily back to square one, but I definitely do feel that when you've done something restrictive like that, even it could just be as simple as restricting your calories and calorie counting, you start to feel deprived. Yeah. And then that often results in like a rebound and you go far the other way and you end up binging. And then so you can end up feeling worse about yourself than you did at the beginning. And that cycle is really common in PCOS. So I say, don't worry about restricting. Don't do something strict like that. Just be consistent. And that's how you form the habits.
Someone has asked, what supplements should I be taking and do I need to take them forever?
Well, that's a really good question. So I'm quite careful with how I speak about PCOS supplements, because again, like we've said, that PCOS affects people so differently. And so I tend to not say, you know, here's blanket supplements, everybody go out and buy them, because that's what I've done. You know, just following people on Instagram and seeing what they're taking and buying the same thing without knowing if their PCOS symptoms are even mine. Yeah. So I'm quite careful with that. No, everybody can benefit from, especially this time of year, taking vitamin D. There are huge links between vitamin D and PCOS symptoms. So if you're deficient, you want to make sure that, you know, get yourself tested and then top that up, especially when the sun isn't out. Magnesium is a great one that most people tend to benefit from, because it just helps to relax the nervous system and get you into that more of a rest and digest state and out of fight or flight. That one, for most people, is not going to cause any harm. The one supplement that I really do advocate for PCOS is inositol. So it's normally a combination of myo and dechiro inositol, but it comes already done, already in that combination. And you take that twice a day, and it's excellent for, you know, as evidence that it restores ovulation. It's comparable to metformin in studies, you know, improving that insulin resistance.
Wow.
It can help with cravings because of that, and it can actually improve egg quality. So that's the one supplement that I say to everyone, that your PCOS will probably benefit from that. And then I take different supplements depending on, you know, what's going on in my life. If I'm having a more stressful time, then you might see that I'm taking a bit more magnesium. In the summer months, I won't take vitamin D. It ebbs and flows. And this is why, again, it's important to learn your PCOS and choose the supplements that are right for you, so that you can see how they impact your body and know if you feel like you don't need them anymore. And as well, get tested regularly. And again, it's difficult. The NHS is so stretched, but go to your GP and say, I feel like I need some panels done. You know, can you check where I'm at with things? So the answer is no. You probably won't need to stay on them for life, but go with how you feel and go with your testing.
Yeah. Someone else asked, I know protein is good, but what else can I have if I find protein powder revolting? I guess in general, actually, diet, what food is good? Because I think one of the reasons why I got so angry at this book that my friend gave me is that it started with all the things I can't have. Don't have this. I was a bit like, well, what's left? What can I eat? Tell me some good news. So what other proteins can she have?
Nothing's off the table. And that's what I really try to express. It's about finding your tolerance for certain foods. So a lot of people feel that when you have PCOS or you have blood sugar issues, you can't eat carbs. You know, you can eat carbs. It's about finding your carb tolerance and not making your carbohydrates the star of the meal.
Yeah.
So I say, to make a perfect plate, you want to put on your protein. So make sure you've got your protein there, then add your fiber. That should be half of your plate. So your veggies, fill half that plate with veggies, and then you add your carbohydrates. It's a side rather than like the main event of your meal. Yeah. And then you add your fats, whether it's nuts and seeds, olive oil drizzled on, or avocado. And if you start to think about structuring your meals like that, you can have a completely balanced diet. If you want to have a glass of wine a couple of times a week, that's fine. If you want to have chocolate, I eat chocolate every single day.
Do you?
I do.
What chocolate are you going for?
I have dark chocolate.
Right.
So I go for 75 or above, or it's normally 70% or above. Now, because I'm so used to it, 70% feels sweet. So you really change your taste buds over time. But I eat chocolate every single day. There's some lovely dark chocolates out there now.
And they carry good benefits as well, don't they?
Oh, absolutely.
I'm just making it up because that's what I want to hear.
No, you're right. No, they're very antioxidant rich, rich in magnesium. I mean, they've got caffeine, so that's always helpful for mums. I just don't eat it at night. I've made that mistake a few times. But yeah, nothing is off the table. You know, I still go out to eat. I really want to stress that it's not about restriction, because if PCOS is for life, then the way we choose to eat and live to manage our PCOS symptoms needs to also be sustainable for life. And this is why I say it's just about consistency. Finding a diet or a way of eating that you can be consistent with, because it's a lifetime's journey. So you have to be able to eat that way or live that way for your life. So nothing's off the table. We can eat everything. We just have to find our tolerance and how it works for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So from the Happy Mum, Happy Baby community, we had a few people write in about their experiences with PCOS. And one person said, every doctor I have seen has demonstrated limited knowledge, lack of urgency towards PCOS. Thus, support hasn't been particularly forthcoming. I have learned about PCOS through my own research, which came about in desperation whilst trying to conceive. I felt very isolated and needed help. But where I felt I needed guidance, it wasn't there unless women can afford to pay for private programmes. Unfortunately, this wasn't an option for everyone. I applaud you for bringing open discussions about to the table about PCOS, but encourage you to be aware of the financial implications of this for women in many areas of the UK. Mm. Which I guess is what you're really fighting for as well, because you, you know how important it is for this information to be there for everyone. It shouldn't be a case of, you know, what's in your pocket or where you live or the postcode lottery when it comes to how long your doctor's going to see you for or what services are provided.
Absolutely. And this is why I wrote the course, because I felt I'm, you know, I see women one-to-one in my clinic, but that is not accessible to everyone. And I feel like this is basic information that anybody with PCOS should be able to access. So I thought to myself, right, if I put this in a video course, it's done and it can be, I can sell it off at a price that I feel is affordable for people. Yeah. They can access that information. So that's what I've done. And that was my motivation behind it, because I thought, this is not okay. It's not okay that it's a postcode lottery, that perhaps you're in a borough that kind of, you know, is a little bit less crowded and you can get a bit more time with your doctor, or you happen to get a doctor who has a personal interest in PCOS and has taken the time to learn about it, or you can afford to see somebody privately. It's so unfair. So by creating the complete PCOS plan, I put everything in there, and I hope that people will find that that is an accessible price point. But I've packed so much, everything is in there, and it's all scientifically backed. So I've got all the papers there as well. If people want to geek out, they can read the papers too. There's workouts, there's everything in there. And I hope that that provides a bit of clarity and a bit of peace for women with PCOS.
And also, I wonder if it's part of it is because of how it presents itself and those symptoms, you know, the putting on weight, the excess hair, the spots. You know, for me, when I was, it's not something you like talking to people about or highlighting, if you like. So it kind of feels like something you want to almost not talk about, you know. I don't want to bring that to the table, but when you do, it's amazing actually. I think it kind of, for some women, it kind of makes you go ding ding ding, that's, I have that, those are my symptoms, I've got to go and get this checked out.
So the more we talk about it, the better. But I completely understand why we don't. It's, you know, it's easy to feel embarrassed about these symptoms and to feel less feminine, and you know, who wants to admit that they're plucking their beard every day? Like, you don't want to. But the more we do speak about these things, the more we can spread that education and combat that misinformation and actually help people to understand that they can go and be diagnosed. And you know, I think some people put off actually going to be diagnosed because of the internal ultrasound. That's something that is actually quite an issue, you know, maybe for religious reasons, because of age, because of experiences that they've had, they don't wish to have that done. Thankfully, things are changing, and they the new PCOS guidelines are taking AMH levels into account with a PCOS diagnosis. So that can be used instead of the internal ultrasound. So that, I hope, will help people to go forward to their GP and ask for a diagnosis without that fear of having to do something that they feel uncomfortable about. Yeah. And hopefully that will help to get that diagnosis level up and remove that taboo a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We end the podcast with you completing three sentences. The first one is, being a parent means?
Seeing the world in a whole new way.
Oh. Second sentence is, if I could tell you one thing, it would be?
You're lovely.
Finally, I'm happy when?
I'm happy when I get to connect with other people in a meaningful way, which is a big part of why I do what I do.
I love it. Thank you so much. I've absolutely loved this chat, and I found it so enlightening for myself. Kind of literally, I've had like little light bulb moments as we've been talking, kind of going, oh my God, like, why have I not even thought about how PCOS might be continuing to affect me? It just has completely shocked me.
Oh, well, I'm pleased.
And keep doing what you're doing, because I think, you know, you're scooping up women at a time where
they
feel so lost, and like the future ahead of them is not as they expect it to be. And I think that's so such an important time to capture them and give them hope.
Well, it's an honour for me to be able to do that. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a really great conversation.
Thank you.